This episode of Boss Level Podcast is sponsored by Lean Agile Scotland. If you want to go beyond the basics, this conference is for you. I thought it was very accurate when last year someone tweeted that Lean Agile Scotland is the conference for agile adults. Because it really is. Speakers include Dave Snowden, whom you've already heard on this podcast, Melissa Perry, whom you've already heard on this podcast, Catherine Kirk, whom you've already heard on this podcast, Jay Bloom, whom you will be hearing on this podcast. So the conference is going to be full of smart people having interesting discussions. To learn more and to get your ticket, go to leanagile.scot. That's leanagile, one word, .scot. When purchasing tickets, be sure to use the promo code BOSSLEVEL, one word, all caps, to get 10% off your ticket price. I'm definitely going to Lean Agile Scotland, so I hope to see you there. Today's guest is Laurie Swanbeck. Among other things, she's one of the teachers of Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, which started out as Google's internal program to teach mindfulness. So the topic for this episode is mindfulness. Why has Google embraced it? How are they embracing it? What's the research behind mindfulness? What is mindfulness and how can I get started with it? At the end of this episode, you'll hear a song. It's from my band's new album that was released a little over a week ago. So if you want to hear it, stick around after the interview. But for now, let's delve into mindfulness. Welcome to the podcast, Laurie.
Thank you.
So let's just start off by who are you and what do you do?
Well, my name is Laurie Swanbeck, and I am Canadian by birth and by upbringing. And when I was in my mid-20s, after a career in marketing and finance in Canada, I thought, gee, I want to do something a little more meaningful in my life. So I looked at what was most meaningful in my life to that point, and I realized it was actually connecting with people and working with people. So I decided to pursue a career in psychology, which was quite a departure, so people thought, from my business life. But that decision took me to California, where I studied what's called transpersonal psychology, which is a type of psychology that really looks at human potential and human flourishing and draws in addition to Western psychology, different contemplative practices, and really looks at how to support people thriving. So I've been a practicing psychologist in San Francisco for the last 16 years. And part of my practice has been to help people develop what's called emotional intelligence. So I've been teaching clients skills to work with emotional intelligence and to train emotional intelligence. And for the last 3 years, I've been doing that within an organization called Search Inside Yourself. So I've been taking these practices of emotional intelligence and mindfulness skills through Search Inside Yourself and teaching them to people and organizations around the world.
Okay, and I think Search Inside Yourself is famous because Google is using it. So Google is teaching employees about mindfulness through a Search Inside Yourself program. And the program is designed to teach emotional intelligence through meditation. So can we talk a little about that? How is that born?
Sure. So Search Inside Yourself was initially started by Changmen Tang, who's was Google employee number 107. And Meng, as we call him, was at that time had experienced challenges in his life that his own meditation practice really helped. And he had a moment of reflection where he thought, you know, what do I want to do really with my life? And he had this audacious vision of creating the conditions for world peace. And he figured, well, you know, world peace starts with each individual. So I am going to create the conditions for peace and well-being in each individual. And he drew upon his own mindfulness practice and consulted with the world's leading experts in emotional intelligence and neuroscience in looking at how the brain changes in response to mindfulness practice. And he put together this program called Search Inside Yourself. So it was initially designed for the engineering mind at Google. So it's very specific, very research-based, very empirically evidence-based, and has become, I think, the most popular course at Google. And there's usually a waiting list for many months for each program. And about 8 years ago, it kind of spun off. And six years ago, it spun off and became its own institute, its own nonprofit. So we still offer courses within Google, and we offer courses to people, general public, as well as within businesses.
Okay. And what does it consist of? So what are the parts of the program?
It's a program, it's a leadership development program that is teaching people how to be emotionally intelligent. And we recognize that emotional intelligence is a set of skills, actually, that can be cultivated. And neuroscience shows us that the more we practice or do anything, the brain changes. This is the concept of neuroplasticity. So if we do certain practices, we can change our brain in ways that support emotional intelligence skills. And the practices that we use in Search Inside Yourself are meditation, mindfulness training practices. So it's a leadership program that combines that teaches emotional intelligence utilizing the principles of neuroscience and the practice of mindfulness to train the brain to support more effective leadership.
Okay, and how long does it take to participate, or like what's the length of the program altogether?
The program initially is, within Google, it's a 2.5-day program. When we offer it to companies, we do an initial 2-day training, but then we have follow-up for 1 month that we, teach people practices, have them continue to utilize the concepts that we've taught, but really to be practicing the skills, because nothing is going to change in your brain or in your life unless you actually do the practices.
Yeah, I actually remember there's, a fairly common way to get into mindfulness is this like 8-week program where you kind of like, it's exercise every day.
Right.
Yeah, and the point is to kind of get into the routine of it.
Absolutely. I think you're probably referring to the mindfulness-based stress reduction.
Yeah,
that's an 8-week program. I think, you know, when we look at mindfulness and the changes that can happen both in our brain and in our behavior and how we regulate emotion, we have to remember that it's similar to working out in the gym. So we could talk here about how fabulous exercise is for your body or how fabulous mindfulness is for your brain, but you're not going to get fit in your body or in your mind unless you do the practices, right?
Of course. Of course. So I think Google has been running this program since at least 2012.
Google has been running it since 2008, I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah. Even further.
Yeah.
So like what are the benefits or what are the things that you see have changed?
Within Google?
Within Google. Like what do you think that people are getting out of it?
We just actually completed some research where participants practice 10 minutes of mindfulness a day, 5 days a week for 8 weeks. And what the participants reported is lower stress, higher levels of well-being, and increased focus. So those are very specific outcomes that we've measured within Google. More subjective self-reports from other companies have been people report being able to stay focused in meetings, be able to get along better with other people because they're able to regulate their emotional states. So it makes them less reactive. People are more creative because they're not caught in their mind and in worry thoughts and in anxiety. So that opens up possibility for creative thinking, for collaboration. There's no way to actually measure those outcomes, but those are more anecdotal reports. But specific research recently from Google is very promising.
Okay, that's really amazing. How about like what other companies do you know that are doing Search Inside Yourself?
Well, mindfulness in general is being practiced in hundreds of companies. Specifically, Search Inside Yourself. We've taught at Ford. I taught in the United Nations, Tennis Australia, Genentech, Microsoft.
Yeah.
And various business schools are bringing us in as well to teach.
Mm, okay. Well, that's awesome. So, actually, let's going into the topic of mindfulness itself a little, and before we actually even talk about what it is, I think it's easy to, or good to talk about like some of the conceptions that people already might have about it. So, first of all, I think it's really easy to dismiss mindfulness as just breathing exercises with no actual measurable benefits, and it's kind of easy to put it in the same box as homeopathy and other nonsense, but there is actual research behind it. So can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of, well, first I'll start with the misconceptions. I think people think it's really woo-woo or really kind of spiritual, or you have to be levitating. and I think, so to address the woo-woo factor, yeah. I think, I myself had that aversion to it initially. And I think it's because it's been associated with, different Eastern spiritual practices, which certainly have and do utilize mindfulness, but mindfulness as a practice is really about a training attention. Mm-hmm. And we use the breath to focus on because most of us are breathing all the time. So it's a very handy way of focusing attention on something that's happening in the moment. There's been extensive research that has been done primarily by Richie Davidson, who runs the Lab for Effective Neuroscience. And he's really looking at what is happening in the brain and in the body when we train our attention. And with the recent advent of, or the recent development of machines that can look inside of our brain and give us a picture of what's happening when we do different things, we're able to see that when we train our attention in very specific ways, the brain changes. And the brain changes within regions that are associated with more regulation, less activation of the fight or flight response, lower cortisol and stress hormone levels are being reported as well. So it's the science now is able to back up the research that people have been, the science is lending credibility to these practices that people have been doing, for thousands of years. Another misconception is that you have to speak very slowly and that you won't have any emotions either, that you're going to be kind of flatline and boring.
Yeah.
Well, personally, that would not be something that would be appealing to me whatsoever. So mindfulness, as we practice it through Search Inside Yourself, is really about optimizing your mind. It's not about slowing things down, but it's making it more efficient. So one of the people I recently taught said it's like defragging your mind, like getting clarity. And we want to be able to be mindful within the speed of our everyday life, to really be present. So it's not necessarily about being really slow, but it's about being aware, right? And this misconception about that it erases emotions, it doesn't at all. We actually get more clarity about our emotions. We recognize what triggers them. We recognize what an emotion feels like in the body. And we recognize the impulse that that emotion might have towards an action or a behavior. And then we get to recognize what would be the best way to respond in a situation. So if I have more clarity about what is motivating me, I can then step back and say, is this going to be the best course of action for me to take depending on the outcome?
Is there in your opinion, a main goal that you're striving towards with mindfulness? I guess goals could be relaxation or clarity or things like that. Is there a single thing that's most important, or is it just everything?
There are different goals for sure, and they complement each other. I personally would say that it's really about clarity. And in order to be clear about what's happening in my own mind, or within an interaction, or, you know, gathering more information about what's happening in the moment, I need to be present. And that's what the attention training does. Is it's, you know, with attention training, it's bringing yourself right here, right now. Because it's only right here, right now that I can actually affect change and I can have clarity about what's happening. So I would say clarity.
Mm. And at the same time, isn't it kind of weird at the same time to have goals with mindfulness? Because isn't one of the points to kind of not have goals and just have a moment to think and not have goals?
That's a great question. Yeah. So we differentiate between intention and goal. So goal, there's a striving and there's an assessment that the only way to success is achieving a certain outcome. With mindfulness practice, we might have an intention of around clarity, or we might have an intention around creating more calmness in the mind. But what we're also doing in addition to that is being able to be with what is here. So we see more clearly, well, actually, my intention might be to be calm. But when I check out what's happening in my mind, I see that actually there's a lot of anger. And maybe that anger is actually important because it's giving me information. So on the way to calm, that having that an intention, I have to know where I am right now. We also talk about not being attached to the outcome.
Yes.
So you can have an intention, but if you're attached to the outcome, then you miss everything along the way, and then you can set yourself up for disappointment.
Yeah. Okay. Going back to the misconceptions, I think one of the things that you probably also hear about often is the like religious part of mm-hmm. mindfulness, or if there is such a thing as a religious part to it. So, well, is there?
Well, I think, you know, to be fair, mindfulness has been practiced in different spiritual traditions, both Eastern and Western, for, you know, for thousands of years, as a recognition of a practice to train your mind. However, secular mindfulness, which is mindfulness that is not associated with any kind of spiritual tradition or system, is really about cultivating the mind. And you might say that science is our religion of our current day, and certainly with the measurement of what's happening in the mind and the body and the brain with mindfulness practice, science is corroborating this. So it could be said that this is a religion of our time, but certainly secular mindfulness is really not associated at all with any specific tradition. But people do practice mindfulness who have spiritual connections, so...
But then again, I mean, if you think about it from the perspective of science and how the research has been done, I think that is kind of, it's been done sort of that religion is not part of it. I mean, you don't,
absolutely.
Yeah, so you can kind yeah. of get the results without the religious parts or,
right.
or that, the spiritual kind of side of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So going into like now, finally, the actual topic of mindfulness. So what is it? And like, what does mindfulness even mean?
There's a definition that is kind of standard in the field from Jon Kabat-Zinn, who really popularized secular mindfulness. And he says that mindfulness is paying attention in the present moment, non-judgmentally. So it's really bringing your attention to what's happening right now and allowing it to be as it is. So that's the non-judgment. So I'm bringing attention to just what it feels like to be sitting with you right now, the nodding of your head. And that's giving me information that will help orient how I show up. So it's really about training attention to increase our capacity. And that capacity could be for greater focus. That capacity could be mental clarity. And that capacity actually could be even compassion and empathy. because when I am present with you, I'm able to feel you as a human being more, right? And when I feel you as a human being, I care more, and I'll show up perhaps in a different way than if I was distracted.
Okay. And how are you, like, how is it possible to train being more present?
It's a great question, and it's an important question, because in our time right now, there are increasing demands on our attention. You know, we have these devices that have become addictive and attention-grabbing for us. And it's not just our devices, it's just the speed of our life right now. Our stress levels and the demands on our time and attention and focus are eroding our capability of being present, of staying focused. So how we train that is we focus on one thing and train our mind, and our mind will wander. It does that. So the practice of mindfulness is, say, using your breath and just focusing on the sensation of breathing, noticing if you can feel a full cycle of breath. And your mind will wander. You'll start thinking about what you're going to do after work today, what you had for breakfast, a fight you had, the email. And then you catch your mind wandering, and then you bring it back. And so the practice is about returning a wandering mind. And the more you can do that, the greater focus you will develop, right? So the fact that the mind wanders is not a problem. But you want to be able to train your mind sort of like a sheepdog, of bringing it back, bringing it back, bringing it back. And when you do that, you change the brain, you change the neural circuitry in the brain through the functioning of neuroplasticity, right? So the more you do anything, you change the brain in certain ways that support both, it changes the brain in both the structure and the function. So we see that the neural networks that are associated with well-being, with lower stress, get strengthened the more we can focus.
I think one of the really powerful things in mindfulness is what you mentioned about not judging your thoughts and just accepting that what's going to happen is that your mind will drift and you're not going to be able to focus on that one thing for a very long period of time. If you can do it for 5 seconds, you're already doing well.
And
I think that was really when I've been doing mindfulness exercises, I've been thinking that that's, to me, that's key. Because if you kind of felt that I failed now that my mind drifted, you'd feel like you're failing all the time.
All the time. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. And that's why I say that the goal isn't to focus. The intention is to bring back a wandering mind. Very different, with the result being focus, right? Because the mind will wander and you just bring it back. And that's that we talk about mindfulness practice as being like a mental workout, like you're going to the gym. That's when you're doing the weight, the rep, right? It's like the mind wanders, you bring it back. And that moment of catching yourself is that moment of lifting the barbell, right? And even though there are benefits of actually training the mind and attention to stay on the breath, what we're really doing here is increasing capacity so that when I'm out in the world, it's not that I necessarily want to be focused on my breath, but I want to be focused on my child. I want to give my full attention to someone in a meeting. I want to be really present to life's joys as well, like what the sunset looks like, how it really feels in my body to hear a wonderful piece of music. So the breath is just a vehicle to train the mind to really be present for this fantastic life that we have.
And when you were talking about focusing your thoughts on one thing, actually, you reminded me of the Pomodoro technique. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay, It's a technique that was developed by, I think, an Italian student, actually. And the idea is that when you're studying or doing something that requires a lot of attention, what you do is you set a timer for 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that during that 25 minutes, you don't do anything but that single task that you've kind of set for yourself. Mm-hmm. So let's say that you're studying for something, then you just read 25 minutes, and if the phone goes off or like someone tries to interrupt you or so on, you just like, you tell them that I'm in the middle of a Pomodoro, and you just try to focus as much as possible. And after 25 minutes, you have a break for 5 minutes. Then you check your phone and you like call people back if so, or whatever you need to do. And then you do another like 25 minute Pomodoro. Mm-hmm. How does that sound to you?
Yeah, that sounds like the development of focus.
Yeah.
Which is one of the aims of mindfulness. It's not the only aim, but development of focus is something that's, it's really essential.
And what's actually interesting about that is also that like the guy who kind of developed it, his instructions for doing Pomodoro also include that you should not do it outside of work. So that the point is that it's kind of, it's when you want to increase productivity, uh-huh. but that like you shouldn't use it to like, I'm going to set a timer for 25 minutes of playing with my kids or anything like right. that, which kind of makes sense. But it's what you're talking about is you do mindfulness practice for work. You can do it for work and for productivity, but you can also do it so that you can enjoy life more.
Absolutely.
Enjoy, like, and relax more and so
be
on.
Be present.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how about starting mindfulness? What would be a great way to kind of, what would be the first thing to do and get started with it easily?
I think, you know, there's a lot of, I think it's hard if you've never practiced just to start. And there's thankfully a lot of apps and websites and podcasts you can listen to that will support your practice. So I suggest that some guided meditations are great ways to start. And very simply, you can just start with focusing on your breath, like just notice what if the sensation of breathing. You can bring mindfulness into an activity you're doing, like just really focus on the sensation of brushing your teeth or drinking your tea or coffee in the morning. So weaving it in so that it's not something so different, because sometimes people say, oh, I don't have time to practice it. Well, just you can just bring full attention to anything you're doing. Now, if you want to develop the brain changes and kind of deeper clarity that comes with extended practice, then I would suggest more of a formal practice, which could be a sitting meditation practice. You don't have to be sitting. You can be walking. You can be standing. But that's really about training your attention to focus on the breath.
Actually, I think a lot of people see sports as meditative and like practice mindfulness through sports. And I'm kind of one of those people that I see that running can be very meditative, and actually even going to the gym can feel like mindfulness if you like, instead of putting on your headphones, you actually try to focus on whatever you're doing. Fully. Mm-hmm. Would you consider like me going to the gym, could that be mindfulness?
Yes, absolutely. You can practice mindfulness doing anything. And I think something that really engages the body in that way is a great way to practice. And, you know, just keeping your attention on the sensations, noticing any thoughts that come up. Because like I said, you can be mindful of anything. So you might notice judgmental thoughts. Oh, how come I'm only lifting 50 pounds today and I lifted 60 pounds yesterday. So you can just be aware of yourself throughout the whole practice, and that becomes your mindfulness training.
Okay. Yeah. How about like, we're talking about starting mindfulness, and I think there are several like apps that you can get for that. At least I think there's an app for iOS called Headspace, and for yeah. Android, I think there's one called Calm.
Yes, those are two great ones.
Yeah, okay. I was just about to ask like if you recommend them or if they're somehow wrong.
No, they're both really great.
Okay, because I think that would be like for many, that's probably an easy way to kind of get started. Just install an app and follow whatever it tells you to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I just want to say too that, you know, the apps really, again, cultivate attention. And what people are finding is that when you calm your mind, you allow other parts of yourself to surface, so you can actually be like a nicer person almost, because you're not caught up in your worry thoughts, and you train your mind to settle. And that ability to not be lost in your thoughts and also to regulate your emotions is one of the really strong benefits of mindfulness.
You mentioned in the beginning that Meng, when he started started Search Inside Yourself, that one of his goals was world peace.
Yes.
Do you think that mindfulness is a way to get us closer to world peace?
You know, I actually do. It's an audacious goal. And the reason I say yes is because, again, kind of going back to neuroscience, that as human beings, we are wired to be self-protective in part, right? We have this fight or flight mechanism. So when we perceive a threat, real or imagined, in our environment, our immediate reactive response is to either, you know, fight or flee, which is really great if we're, you know, in a situation where our life is really in danger. But most of the threats in our modern world come from chronic stress, from misinterpreting something, the intentions of something, somebody else. So when our fight or flight mechanism gets triggered continuously, we show up in ways that are defensive, hostile, reactive, and those are the opposite of world peace conditions. So the more I'm able to learn how to regulate my emotions through developing self-awareness, which is the foundational skill of emotional intelligence, the more I'm able to develop self-awareness, I will be less reactive to whatever stimulus comes my way. And that will seed the conditions for peace within my own self, within my relationships, and ultimately that will spread.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting how the brain, or how our bodies are at the moment incapable of distinguishing between like a snake or a threatening social situation.
Absolutely.
Within the body, yeah. It's the same thing.
Yes.
And that, so we kind of see very similar threats that we, like, if our life was actually in danger when we can have get the same feeling when we're in a business meeting.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we're really learning through emotional intelligence to hack really our basic survival mechanism and access more regulated states that help us make more skillful choices. So that's where mindfulness practice really supports this, because with mindfulness, we get clarity. We know what's happening. We know what our reactions are, and we're able to choose. And that shift from reactivity or compulsion into choice is where our power lies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We just learned that we can achieve world peace through mindfulness. So if you don't share this episode on social media, that means that you're against world peace. You monster. Anyway, as promised, this episode will end with a song. It's from the new Embreach album titled The World That We Have Lost. The song is called Tierra Valentina. We're a death metal band, so most of the songs are pretty heavy, but I chose a lighter song that I think fits the mood of this episode better. I'm the singer in the band. If you like it, the full album is available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Bandcamp, and others. If you want to see us live, the album release gig is going to be on Saturday, the 28th of May at Bar Backstage in Helsinki. All the links are in the show notes. Enjoy the song and talk to you again in 2 weeks. Tierra Valentina, do you have
pledge my heart, Tierra Valentina, forgive what I have done, Tierra Valentina, disappointment. Ignorance.